Welcome to Trial Stories, an informative discussion of civil justice with a focus on the human story. I'm your host, Arkady Frechtman, a New York City trial lawyer passionate about helping serious injury victims and their families. Hi, everybody. This is Arkady Frechtman, a New York City personal injury trial attorney, and I'm actually preparing for a trial to start May 15th, and it involves a spinal fusion after a herniated disc with radiculopathy. So I thought I would do a video all about spinal surgeries just to educate the audience and as well as to learn myself, because I recently learned a lot of this by doing my own research and watching some YouTube videos and other resources. So I wanted to share it with you. So what is a herniated disc? I mean, many of you know a herniated disc is basically the back is made up of vertebrae, which are the bones, and then you have the discs in the middle. And the discs are like this, they're a cushion, basically, like a jelly donut. And a jelly donut is a really good analogy because there's the annulus fibrosis, which is the outer wall, and it's hard, okay? And then you also have the nucleus pulposus, which is like the center, the nucleus, and that is more soft. And what happens is when you get into an accident or an injury, when you fall, everything falls, what happens is that nucleus, the center, the jelly, can break through all of those walls, because there's a few walls, and then finally start to leak outside the disc, and that you could see in the red part here. And when it starts to leak, it's touching the nerve roots. You see the yellow part, that's the nerve roots. Now, this is not all of the nerve roots. What you have is you have the, it's almost like a canal, right? They call it the cauda equina, which is the horse's tail, because the horse's tail has all those nerve fibers. Or imagine like an electrical circuit, right? The main electrical circuit in your house where all the electricity runs, right? So this is like the control panel. It runs from your brain down your spinal column, and then it exits and you have different nerves and they keep going, right? So they go from your back and they'll go to your arms all the way to your fingers. And that's how basically you move. That's how you feel pain. If you touch your finger, that's how you feel pain. So it'll travel all the way from your brain down your spinal column to your hands, to your feet, to your entire body. That's called innervation. You have nerves and your whole body gets innervated, right? So that's how it works. So then what happens is because you have that leak from the disc, it's touching the nerve, it's causing you pain, severe, severe pain. And so people try physical therapy, they try pain management, including injections to make the pain go down. They try a percutaneous discectomy to remove, decompress the disc, remove the leak from the disc, make the disc more of a perfect circle. But sometimes that disc is just damaged and there's nothing anyone can do. And it's not just the disc, there's also other types of problems people could have. For example, the bone could start growing bone spurs, and then that could lead to impingement on the nerve. So there's a lot of different things that could happen. So basically, the most common is the herniated disc. And then when you can't do anything else, people sometimes have spinal surgery, and there's different types of spinal surgeries. And one of the popular ones is a fusion. With a fusion, what the doctor is basically doing is he's removing the disc and he's putting in a graft, bone graft. Oftentimes it's from the hip crest right here. He takes it from the iliac crest, takes the bone graft and puts this graft in there. And then what they have to do is they have to drill screws into the vertebrae, into the bone, above and beyond where the disc is, and they put a plate, sometimes called a cage. And the reason they do all that is because they're hoping that the two bones are gonna fuse together, meaning they're gonna grow together, they're gonna bridge together. And if they do that, you're gonna lose mobility because now you don't have a disc, right? You put in bone graft there, but you're hoping that the two bones will fuse together. And then once they fuse, you're gonna lose a little bit of mobility, but you're not gonna have that pain because the nerves are behind and they're still gonna, and you have, of course, these foramen, which are the holes where the nerves exit, and you have the facets, which are these things back here where each disc sits on top of each other in the back. So basically, that's the hope, right, of what a fusion should be. But then people have all these sorts of problems like radiculopathy. Radiculopathy is radiating pain, and that's nerve root compression. People sometimes have myelopathy. Myelopathy is cord compression, where the entire spinal cord is being compressed. That's much more serious than just radiating pain. So that's also something that happens, myelopathy. And so sometimes a patient will have something known as a non-union. A non-union means that the two vertebrae that we talked about, right, the two bones above and beyond, above and below where the herniated disc is, these two bones, they don't fuse. And it's just that they just don't fuse properly. What the doctor will do is sometimes he'll actually use like a burr, a high-speed burr, and he'll shave some of the bone at the cortical bone. He'll shave it because, you know, when you shave bone, it's going to regrow. The wound actually helps it to regrow. So they'll do that, and they'll put in the bone graft from the hip. That's all an attempt to have the bone bridge and have it grow together. But sometimes it doesn't. And I've been watching some videos from surgeons, actual surgeons that are doing a lot of these ACDF procedures. And what a lot of them say is it's a race. And it's a race between what will happen first, the non-union or the fusion, right? One or the other is going to happen first. And oftentimes you get a non-union. So after a non-union, people experience really severe pain. And it usually happens 6 months to a year after the surgery. And so that happens if the two vertebrae do not bridge together, do not unify. And what it does is it leaves a hole, because you have a hole, a space between these two vertebrae in your spine. And then the nerves in the spinal column, what they do is they re-innervate, meaning they grow again, and then they fill that hole. So now, you know, you're going to have pain again, because now instead of having a perfect bridging, you're going to have the nerves re-innervate. And one of the doctors explained this is why non-unions are so painful, because those sensory nerve fibers will come back in, and they could touch and the nerve roots get impinged again. And he actually said that the pain fibers will regrow into the non-union area. And that's when someone might need a revision surgery, like a second surgery. And oftentimes the second surgery isn't the same as the first surgery, but it has to be more involved. So the first surgery could be an anterior approach, meaning from the front, where they just put a plate and screws. But then the revision surgery may have to be from the back, where they put rods with pedicle screws. And then sometimes people need both the posterior and the anterior. And that really holds the spine together. But he did a nice illustration where he talked about all of the different types of nerves, like the recurrent nerve, there is the medial branch nerve, and the sympathetic trunk ganglion, the blood vessels, the viscera. It gets a little, you know, complicated medical, but he's explaining how these pain fibers regrow into the non-union area. And that's one of the reasons that people have a lot of pain after having a fusion surgery. And then basically, there's a lot of different things that you could talk about here with the bone graft being between the vertebrae. You have behind everything, you have the posterior longitudinal ligament, known as the PLL. You have the spinal cord. You have cerebral spinal fluid, known as the CSF. You have, like we talked about, dermatomes, right? So you have the nerves running from the spinal column down to the arms, down to the back, into the legs, everywhere. And there are specific nerves, specific areas that control specific parts of your body. Like, for example, between C7, which is the final neck vertebrae, right? C7, cervical 7, and T1, which is the first mid-back vertebrae. So C7, T1, you have what's known as the C8 nerve root. And the C8 nerve root runs down and it controls the fingers. And it'll control specifically like the middle finger and the ring finger. So, and the pinky. So, for example, if you have a damaged C8 nerve root, then your pinky finger could become spastic, meaning it'll just stick out because that's what the nerve controls. So each nerve controls a specific part of the body. And I'll put up a slide to show you. There's slides that show exactly what everything controls. So then the other thing, it's just, I mean, to me, it's really interesting. He was talking about a posterior cervical laminectomy infusion. And he was talking about how you have to follow the facet with the screws. And when you put in the screws, you have to do it at an angle and you have to be very careful because the main thing that the surgeon wants to do is avoid the vertebral artery. Because of course you have the vertebral artery, which is the artery in the neck that supplies blood to the brain and spine. So if that gets nicked even a little bit by the screw coming in, not at the proper angle, but let's say straight in, then obviously the patient would suffer severe brain damage and could even die. So that's very, very serious. And he did some drawings of how he does it, the technique. And then there are complications that people have after the surgery. For example, when you do the anterior approach from the front, one of the known complications is difficulty swallowing, difficulty talking. Because when they go in, there's a lot of things they have to move around. They have to move the esophagus, the sternocleidomastoid muscle, the platysma muscle has to be like cut and moved because to get to this area in the neck it's much smaller, but to get to all these bones and discs, you have to go through a lot of material. And with the posterior approach from the back, that leads to a longer recovery. So like we talked about, he says that a fusion surgery is a race between a non-union implant failure versus a bone fusion, which will happen first. And oftentimes, unfortunately, the non-union happens first. And the other thing that some of these surgeons talk about when they do their videos, and these are videos that they're doing not for lay people, but for other doctors to teach them how to do surgery. But I wanted to learn as much as possible about it. So I was watching some of these videos and I felt like some of it is very, very interesting. One of the things he was talking about is that every disc in the spine, so if you imagine the spine vertically and then looking down almost like a sagittal image, right? All of the planes of the discs, all of them are a different shape. So for example, the C2 one looks almost like, I don't know, like a certain shape. The C6 is more of an elongated shape. The L3 is more triangular, so is the L2. The L5 is very triangular, whereas the C4 is more like a heart shape. So each of them, and the C1 is more like a circle. So each of them have a different shape. So that means that when the nerve roots, when the discs herniate and when the leaks come out, each of them has to be dealt with differently. And basically the sagittal views of the MRIs show how blocked that canal is, because it is almost like a tunnel, a canal, but it's not like a tunnel, like when you go through a tunnel with your car, it's just like one shape, right? You go through the tunnel and then you're out of the tunnel. Here it's a tunnel, but each part of the tunnel going from your neck down to your sacrum is a different shape. So then the doctor has to account for that. And of course, that's one of the reasons that people have different types of pain. And sometimes it's hard to diagnose where the pain is coming from. He talks about the L2, for example, the lumbar 2 has a large opening, but others are much smaller, like L4, L5, and some have blocks like L5, S1. And then he talked about lumbar laminectomies, which is a type of surgery where the lamina in the back, this is the lamina, the big part here, that actually gets cut off to allow for the nerves to move. And a foraminotomy, that's when the hole, that little circular hole behind where the nerves come out, that gets opened up. So a doctor will go in and open that up. So there's a lot of different things that can happen. Sometimes patients hear noises after a fusion surgery. The reason they might be hearing noises is because of a spinal device failure, especially when a cap, like a locking cap, because remember, they're putting in those screws and they're pedicle screws and they're supposed to lock. There's a locking mechanism, but sometimes the cap could like fall off. And if the cap falls off, well, now you're going to hear noises. The other thing that happens is sometimes the screws just, you know, for whatever reason, the screws are in your bone. So if you're moving, obviously you're going to be moving. This is your spine, right? All motion comes from the spine with your hands. You're going to move, you're going to walk. So those screws are in your vertebrae, in your bone. So the screws will start going up and down, almost like a windshield wiper within your bone. So now they're going to open up a canal, open up its own hole, create a hole, and then the screws are going to start moving. And that's known as like, that's a type of hardware failure. So he talks about that as well. And yeah, here's an illustration of all the different dermatomes and where they go. Like we talked about, the C7 goes to the these fingers, the C8 goes to these fingers in this part of the hand. C6 goes to the thumb, but it also goes all the way up the arm. And he has like a specific, they have many illustrations. You could maybe Google it. There's a lot online that talk about it. C3, C4 is more like the neck here. C5, C6 also goes to the trapezius in the back. So it just controls different parts of the body. Like, for example, yeah, C5 is known to control the bicep. C7 is the wrist flexion, which is like the wrist flexion. So there's a lot of different things that, and there's actually an ASIA, Asia Spinal Cord Injury Sheet, where it's a standard neurological classification of spinal cord injury. There's motor and there's sensory, and the doctor will fill that out and try to understand where the pain is coming from, what's happening. And then, like we talked about with the nerve roots, one of the things that is interesting is that the nerve roots that come from the, from the spinal cord behind the disc include the dorsal root ganglion. And that's part of the nerve. And the dorsal root ganglion holds all the pain receptors. So that's where the pain receptors are. And so you could see it on this image. It's almost like the nerve is just a line. It's the nerve, kind of like you see here, right? This is the nerve, just like a thin piece, but then it becomes a little bit thicker, becomes almost like a little bit thicker, kind of like when you look at some leaves, they might get thicker in parts so it gets thicker, and that's where it gets thicker. That's the dorsal root ganglion. And then it branches off, that's the dorsal ramus. And the nerves keep branching and branching, and that's how they innervate, you know, your entire body. So, so we have some pictures of nerve roots here. And,
hey there, podcast listeners. Before we continue discussing personal injury law, I want to remind you to subscribe to our podcast and check out our YouTube channel for even more great content. And if you have any questions about personal injury law, head over to our website at 866-ATTYLAW.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. Want to stay informed about personal injury law? Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and check out our YouTube channel for exclusive content. And if you have any questions about personal injury law, head to our website at 866-ATTYLAW.com. Thank you for listening. It's time for a quick break, podcast fans. But before we go, make sure you're subscribed to our podcast and our YouTube channel for more information about personal injury law. And if you have any questions or comments, head to our website at 866-ATTYLAW.com. See you very soon. Thanks for listening to our podcast, everyone. If you're interested in learning more about personal injury law, make sure you subscribe to our podcast and check out our YouTube channel for additional content. And if you have any questions or want to learn more about accidents, injuries, or personal injury law, head to our website at 866-ATTYLAW.com. We'll be back with more insights about personal injury law in just a moment. But first, a reminder to subscribe to our podcast and check out our YouTube channel for more information. And if you have any questions or want to know more about personal injury law, head on over to our website at 866-ATTYLAW.com. Thank you for tuning in.
Also, he was talking about if you do the posterior approach from the back with a patient laying on their stomach and cutting from the back and doing the surgery from the back, all the muscles have to be transgressed during the operation. And he showed this photo and he showed all this brown, and there's a lot of brown, and all the brown is muscle. And he says that's why it takes so much longer to heal and so much painful to do the posterior surgery. And then, like we talked about, the foraminotomy, that's when they open up the hole so the nerve isn't touched and it makes a circle in the medial border of the facet joint so that the nerves have more of a pathway to exit without being impinged, without being compressed. Because any kind of compression on those nerves is what's causing the pain. And myelopathy is an injury to the spinal cord caused by severe compression that may result in spinal stenosis. It could be because of spinal stenosis, disc degeneration, which means like the normal aging process. It could be from a disc herniation. It could be from an autoimmune disorder or other trauma. So that's a serious diagnosis, the myelopathy. And then he did one video about how to read an MRI. And he talked about that it's a magnetic field, has to be strong enough. 1.5 Tesla is strong enough to pick up a car. So it's a magnet, and it reads energy and radio waves, and it gives us sections or slices of what it's seeing. And then he compared a normal MRI of a child with perfect discs, and you could see the spinal cord and the entire canal is not compressed. There's plenty of room for everything. And then he compared it and contrasted it with a damaged MRI, which shows somebody who's injured. And you could see that it's very, very different. Very, very different, because you could see that the canal is just getting compressed either by bone or by the herniated discs. And then you just don't have that movement of the nerves, and the nerves are becoming very, very painful. Yeah, so that's very interesting. There's a lot of medicine here. Here's a picture of cervical myelopathy. And it's very good because on the left, you see what's normal and you see like the open canal. And then on the right, you see the what's known as stenosis, which is basically narrowing. Stenosis just means that everything's gotten narrower. So there's not enough room. So really, cervical myelopathy is a space issue. There's not enough space for the spinal cord to send signals from the brain to the arms, from the brain to the legs, and the rest of the body. So it's really an architectural or a structural issue. And when there's no other option to fix it, then you need the surgery. And then compression of the neck, of the cervical spine, it will affect your hands. And myelopathy, it's known as a myelopathic hand. And it results with difficulty with grip, difficulty with release, loss of motor strength, and sometimes spasticity, which is a condition where there's an abnormal increase in muscle tone or stiffness of the muscle, which might interfere with movement, speech, and be associated with discomfort. And there's different types of spasticity. Sometimes people with developmental disabilities will get spasticity, a hand like this, or like a pronated forearm, or a clenched fist, and you just can't, your hand is like that, you can't do anything about it. Sometimes the palm will be in the thumb like this. And that's all because the nerves are damaged, moving from the neck down to the arms and to the hands. So sometimes what doctors will have to do is they'll have to do the surgery on your spine, but they'll have to also do a surgery on your actual hand, because you have different tendons in the hand, and there's hand surgeries. Usually it's a transfer. They'll transfer a nerve or a ligament from one part of the hand to another, which is also a very complicated, involved surgery. So this doctor, basically he was saying that when you have compression of the spinal cord and when it affects hand function, the patient will have difficulty with hand dexterity. He'll have something known as hyperreflexia, a positive Hoffman sign, which is a type of test that they do, a positive Romberg sign, and gait disturbance. And, basically, like the Hoffman sign, what they do is they tap or flick the nail of the middle finger or ring finger to produce flexion of the index finger to the thumb. And a positive Hoffman sign occurs when snapping the patient's distal phalanx of the middle finger leads to a spontaneous flexion of the other finger. So that's a nerve injury, right? You're moving, you're touching one finger, but now the other fingers are spontaneously moving. So something's wrong. So that's the Hoffman's. And that's one of the ways they test for it. And then the Romberg is a neurological examination that's used to test for balance and coordination. And it really checks the patient's ability to stand with their feet parallel together, with their eyes open and closed for about 30 seconds. And so it's more of a balance test. And the doctor basically said that if a patient will have difficulty with hand dexterity and a positive Hoffman's, a positive Romberg's, and then they'll feel unstable on their feet. And so, yeah, that's really like a big sign. If you have that issue with balance and you can't have a steady gait, that could be an indication that you need spinal surgery. And then there's the finger escape sign. So basically just the finger escapes and you ask the patient to hold the fingers extended and adducted like this, just regular. And if one finger escapes, then that means that if it spontaneously abducts due to weakness of the intrinsic muscle, then that is that's a sign of spinal cord and compression and hand function compression from the neck. And he said basically the condition is usually progressive, meaning it gets worse with time and it rarely improves without surgery. And surgical treatment involves decompression and stabilization of the neck, of the cervical spine. And like we talked about, gait problems, meaning problems with walking, problems with gait, problems with balance, gait disturbance, that's a telltale sign of cervical myelopathy, an indication that you need surgery. And then cervical spine myelopathy sometimes is caused by spondylosis, which is the kind of like when the bone leads to these spurs and when the bone gets a little bit like spurs that will impinge on the nerves as well. Cervical spine myelopathy, and then there's compression of the cervical spinal cord. So yeah, and then kyphosis, of course, is when you sit with your neck forward. You want to sit with your neck back as much as possible because your spinal cord is behind you. But people are always like texting, looking at their phones, so they tend to lean their head forward, but it's actually really bad for you. I have that habit too, but you have to always keep your shoulders back and your neck back as much as possible. That's really important. That's one of the ways that it can lead to problems. And then here's an illustration of the cervical spine. It's a spine concept, cervical spine, and they show you the C1, which is the first vertebrae in the neck, all the way down to C7. And then flexion extension occurs at C4, C5. Rotation occurs at C1, C2. And basically meaning like 50% of, like when you rotate your head, 50% of it is happening at C1, C2, at that vertebrae. And flexion and extension is mostly happening at C4, C5. And cervical disc problems usually affect the lower nerve root. So it's very common to have a problem at C6, C7. And it affects the C7 nerve root. And the C7 deals with the elbow, extension of the elbow, as well as the triceps reflex. Whereas the C8 is the finger flexion, the C6 is elbow flexion. So all of them will correspond to different nerves that travel to different parts of the hand. And there's a lot of interesting slides that show the dermatomes and show what gets involved with Okay. So we hope this has been helpful. Let us know what questions you have. And if you have any other questions about spine issues, spinal surgeries, this video is more about the anatomy of the spine a little bit, as well as spinal fusions. But there's a lot of other types of procedures. There's pain management. There's epidural steroid injections, percutaneous discectomies. There's laminectomies, discectomies. There's other types of procedures. Sometimes people don't need any procedures, right? They just get better through maybe, you know, through physical therapy or through working out or fixing the problem. And then there's, of course, there's a lot of new techniques, like more like laser surgeries or disc replacement surgeries rather than fusions, where the disc is removed and you're hoping the bone bridges together or unifies. So let us know what you think. We are here for you, and have a great day. Okay. Bye-bye.